Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon to all of you in Eugene and whoever else might be connecting on our webcast. Hope our broadcasting goes well today. I promise to not stream any basketball games, so as not to use up too much bandwidth. So as I was preparing for my message, I had so many scriptures that I wanted to turn to. It was kind of hard to narrow down, and I thought, well, I wonder if it's possible to do a two-part split sermon. I mean, we just had a two-part sermon for Mr. Pennelly. So I thought, well, maybe a two-part split sermon. But then I thought, well, I've never heard of one of those before, and I'm not going to be the first one to do that. So I won't. We'll just get it through. But, you know, I know that we're all practiced at going through a lot of material fast. We've had Mr. Pennelly and his Bible studies warming us up. So, Josh, if you could turn the slides on, please. So I have slides today. May or may not help us, but we'll see. There we go. Title slide. So I was reading reading the Gospels in the past month or so, and the preface in my Bible to the book of John talked about something I never heard before. I probably should have. I know I've heard it before, but I couldn't remember it at the time. But in the preface, it talked about the seven I Ams that were in John, and that kind of interested me, and I kind of started digging around into that and decided to use that as the topic for today's split sermon. And as I was doing the research, I just looked, how many I Ams are there in John? And turns out that the phrase I Am is used 67 times in the book of John. And just to compare that to the other Gospels, Matthew is 19 times, Mark only 11, it's a smaller book, but only 11 times, and Luke 22 times. So there's a significantly more times that I Am is used. Now, not all the I Ams are significant. Sometimes it's just somebody said, I am here. But many of them are significant. I want to go through those. Just as another note, there was one book of the Bible that had more than 67 I Ams. In fact, 102 I Ams. Anyone have a thought in your mind of what book uses the term I Am more than the book of John? And by the way, I'm using this. These numbers came from the New King James Version, and I was using BibleGateway.com. So if there's any discrepancies in the numbers, go see that website. So that other book, anyone guess? It was actually the book of Ezekiel. It had 102 uses of the term I Am. Anyone pick that one? When I looked at the seven I Ams, I thought, well, I know what at least one of them is, and it turns out I was wrong. But let's look at that one that I was wrong on, so we can kind of start. Because I would really think in my mind, there's actually eight significant I Ams. And so let's get that one off the table, but it's important. We'll start in John chapter 8, verse 58, and read this one. John chapter 8, verse 58. So here it says, and this is the second time he used this in this passage, in this section in chapter 8, but he says, and Jesus said to them, most assuredly I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So here Jesus is clearly establishing who he was, and John is writing this down because it's significant and important, and that's why John recorded this. So we're in the book of John, and we're going to spend a lot of our time here, so if you would like, you might want to put a bookmark there. Probably in my 35 or 40-minute message here, I'm going to spend about 50 minutes in the book of John. So we'll just be there a lot. Now, somehow I'm going to make up the other 10 or 15 minutes in the other books. We'll figure out how that goes. But yeah, bookmark around chapter 9, and you're going to be within a couple pages of most of my verses. Let's see here. So as I go along, well, let's move to the next slide. So in the book of John, just to kind of give a little bit of a background or framework, the central doctrine, or one of the central doctrines of the book of John is that Jesus is God, the Son of God, and he is deity. The other Gospels, we all know this, they're called synoptics. Synoptics means same look. They all have the same look. They tell some of the same stories, not exactly the same, but John, as we all know, takes a different approach. And his focus, again, is that Jesus is the Son of God, and he is God. Just as a reference, one of Matthew's focuses is that Jesus is the Son of David. Mark has a bit of a focus saying that God is a servant, and Luke takes the approach that God, or Jesus, is the Son of Man. One of the other things that John is dealing with in his book, so his book was written much later than all the other Gospels, maybe even in the 90s AD. He's dealing with the Gnostics, similar to what Paul was addressing, that came later. So he's dealing with Gnosticism, and we'll see that. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. John tells us why he writes the book, his book, and let's turn over to that passage and at the end of the book, John 20, verse 31. This really helps set the framework. It's at the end of the book, but when you read this and you go back and study the book, you kind of realize, why did he put the things in there that he did? John chapter 20 and verse 31. And it says here, "But these things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." So here he's writing his gospel so that we will believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And of course there's a reason for that believing, not just to believe it, but we believe it so that we can have life in his name. This is one of the main reasons John wrote what he wrote in this book, why he put this gospel together. So today I'm going to go through these seven I Ams. We already covered our eighth one. We'll go through the seven I Ams, and I think these things are going to help remind us of the incredible nature of Jesus the Christ, the Son of God. And along the way, I'm going to add a few side notes about the book of John so we can kind of just understand a few things, or at least be reminded of a few things about the book of John. All right, so the first I Am that I'm covering is the light of God. We can see this passage in John 8 and verse 12. So if you want to look over there in John 8 and verse 12, and we'll see the first I Am. Here it says in John 8 and verse 12, "Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." Also in John 9, verse 5, he says something very similar, that he is the light of the world. So what is the world like without Jesus? We're going to look at a couple passages on that. And we'll turn all the way back to Genesis. So here in the book of Genesis at the beginning, we're going to look at Genesis 1 and verse 2. Here in Genesis 1 and verse 2, what has happened? Of course, the world was created, and then Satan came down to the world and had kind of his way with the earth, and it became destroyed. What was it like? Genesis 1 verse 2, it says, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters." So here, without God or without Jesus, the world is in darkness. Another passage, well, we won't turn here, but another thing that is interesting, when Jesus was on the cross, from the sixth hour to the ninth hour, the world was in darkness, or at least that part of the earth, if not the whole world, was in darkness. This is a time where he was kind of away from the world, and everything was in darkness. This is what it's like without Jesus. Another passage I do want us to turn to that describes what is the world like is Proverbs 4, verse 19. We can see what the world is like without Jesus, the light. Proverbs 4 and verse 19. Here it says, "The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble." So without Jesus, people are in the dark. We would be in the dark without Jesus. And we're stumbling around. People are stumbling around, and they're tripping over things or maybe hurting themselves, either spiritually or even physically, because they don't know. They can't see. They don't even know what is causing them to stumble without Jesus. But we have that Jesus has come. He came and will, of course, come again. And he is that light. He is the light that we need and the world needs. We can see a couple scriptures on this. 1 John 2, verse 8, if you want to turn there, we'll read that one. Talks more about how Jesus is the light of the world. 1 John 2 and verse 8. Here it says, "Again, A new commandment I write to you, which thing is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. So the darkness of this world with Jesus is passing away. Certainly when he returns the second time, there will be incredible light from his return. But in our lives, if we believe in Jesus, we will have that light. David knew about this even before Jesus came to the earth the first time. Over in 2 Samuel 22 and verse 29, David talks about this. If you want to turn over there, we'll read that one. Here David is in a prayer, and he's just been saved, probably one of the many times he'd been saved from his enemies. In this case, maybe Saul was after him, and he has most of the chapter is a prayer that he is giving. And in verse 29 of 2 Samuel 22, it says, "You are my lamp, O Lord. The Lord shall enlighten my darkness." So even way back then, David knew that Jesus was the light. Through him, we can see the right way. Now, of course, we have a responsibility in this. If Jesus is the light, what is our responsibility? We can look at a couple passages here. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. 1 Peter 2, verse 9. I've paraphrased it a little bit to highlight the important parts, but let me read the whole verse here in 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. It says, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of the darkness into his marvelous light." So we've been called into the marvelous light that is Jesus. And then back a few pages in the Bible over to Philippians 2 and verse 15. Philippians 2:15. Says that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without the fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Among you shine as lights in the world. So we have this responsibility. So we have the light from Jesus, but we don't just, as one passage says, we don't just put it under a basket and hide that light. We need to take that light from Jesus and shine, and we need to be lights within this world. That's part of our responsibility. Romans, we won't turn there, but Romans 13, verse 12, talks about putting on the armor of light. So Jesus is that light, and then we need to reflect Jesus and be a light within this world. So that's the first I am. As a side note, I thought I would take a little bit of time to go through all the parables that John has in his book. All right, did you get them all? I can repeat them if you'd like. For some reason, John doesn't actually have any parables in his book. Just an interesting, well, at least for me, it was a little bit of an interesting side note. All right, the second I am that I had is that Jesus says that he said, "I am the door." So let's turn over to John chapter 10, and we're going to read, or at least I'll be reading, John chapter 10, 1 through 9. John 10, 1 through 9. Starting in verse 1, it says, "Most assuredly, I say to you, that he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know the voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers." Jesus used this illustration in verse 6, "but they did not understand the things which he spoke." Continuing in verse 7, it says, "Jesus said unto them again, Most assuredly I say to you." So he, in the first few verses, he's kind of telling them, maybe in a little bit of a roundabout way, what he wants to say, but in verse 7, he tells them as directly as he can. He says, "Most assuredly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pastures. So here he is the door, and this, as it says in verse 6, people didn't understand these things. What I found interesting as you read through these Gospels, some things that happen in the Gospels or Jesus says, at least in my mind, well, that's obvious because we've heard the whole story so many times. But there are some things even that are, even if you know the whole story, you've read the whole New Testament, it's still a little bit like, what does this really mean? But for the disciples, hearing these things without knowing the whole story must have been a little bit of a head scratcher for them. And what I found in the book of John, which is interesting, is that there are a few times where John added some things like, oh yeah, this is what we saw at the time, but now we kind of figured this out. And I think that's probably true for a lot of these things. Like when Jesus said he is the door, I don't know that the disciples knew it, fully understood that, but in time they began to learn more and more. Let's look at a couple examples where John adds some things afterwards. And I found these very interesting. We'll look at two, John 12 and verse 16. I think it's very insightful for kind of the development of these first Christians, these disciples, and how they learned over time. Verse 12 and chapter 12 and verse 16. His disciples did not understand these things at first, but when Jesus was glorified, then they remembered that these things were written about him, and that they were done, and they had done these things to him. Another passage. Similar is in chapter 2 and verse 22. Chapter 2 and verse 22, back a few pages. Here it says, therefore, when he had risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this to them, and they believed the scriptures and the word which Jesus had said. So they were remembering things, and there's some passages, I don't think it's in the book of John, where Mary heard things or saw things, and it says she kept those kind of in her heart. She remembered those later. And that's what's interesting to me is, you know, John is adding these later, like, oh, yeah, that's what was said and what he meant. So I think that's kind of the same way with the door. But we know that we have to enter through a door to eternal life eventually, and that door is Jesus. And he's going to let his people in and keep the people out that he doesn't want in. So we go through the door, which is Jesus. So now we're moving on to our third. I'm trying to, with these, kind of build, and I'll explain maybe another point or two, trying to build on top of each other as we go. But the third is, Jesus says that he is a vine. And we'll find these passages in John chapter 15, verse 1, and also in verse 5. So John 15, verse 1 says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Skipping down a couple verses to verse 5, it says, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. Jesus used vineyards and agriculture throughout his ministry. Of course, these were people that were very connected to agriculture in that society. But as I looked into this, him saying he's the true vine, I found it interesting because if you go back to the Old Testament, God talks about a vine. And we'll read a couple verses or a couple passages there. Let's start with, on this point, Psalm 80, verse 8. Psalm 80, verse 8. So if you don't want to turn there again, it's Psalm 80, verse 8. And here it says, reflecting back, I'm not sure who the author of this particular psalm was, but reflecting back on Israel's history, it says, you have brought a vine out of Egypt. You have cast out the nations and planted it. So here, Israel is like the vine that was brought out of Egypt. Let's look at that a little further. So I won't turn there, but Hosea 10, verse 1, called Israel a spreading vine. Isaiah chapter 5 is another point, another place where it talks about Israel as a vine. So I want to read that one, that passage. Isaiah chapter 5, and I want to read 1 through 7. hearing this. I think it's very insightful that talks about the vine that existed as Israel and what it was like and what the true vine of Jesus is like, and we can compare and contrast. So here in Isaiah chapter 5, starting in verse 1, I will sing for the one I love a song about his vineyard. My loved one had a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug it and cleared it of stones and planted it with the choicest vines. He built a watchtower in it and cut it out of a winepress as well. Then he looked for a crop of good grapes. So here up until this point, Isaiah is writing about how Israel was planted in this very fertile place. They had everything going for them. And so the vine dresser was ready for the good grapes. But what happened? But it yielded only bad fruit. Now you dwellers in Jerusalem and people of Judah, judge between me and the vineyard. What could have been done for my vineyard that I have done for it? So God did everything he could for this vineyard to produce good fruit, and it didn't. Now when I look for good grapes, why did it only yield bad? Now I will tell you what I'm going to do to my vineyard. I will take away its hedge, it will be destroyed. I will break down its wall, and it will be trampled. I will make a wasteland, neither pruned nor cultivated, and briars and thorns will grow there. I will command the clouds not to rain on it. And the vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the nation of Israel, and the people of Judah are the vines he delighted in. And he looked for justice, but saw bloodshed, for righteousness, but heard cries of distress. So physical Israel was a vine that God planted, but it had no chance to survive because it wasn't based on, the Israelites weren't growing off of Jesus, the true vine. So we have this example of a physical vine, in a way, almost, well, physical Israel being a vine, and we see the result, which is something bad, not producing good fruit. But Jesus comes along and says, I'm the true vine, and you will then grow off of me and become branches that grow good fruit. Oops. Hope I wasn't blinding anyone with my red light. Didn't realize that was on. What's interesting, so many things in the Old Testament point forward to Jesus. Now, of course, there are the things that we always talk about, especially during the Holy Days, pointing forward. But what's interesting, something I hadn't really thought about before, is how this vine imagery was talked about in the Old Testament, being this physical Israel pointing forward to a true vine that we need to be a part of. So that nation of Israel, you know, they were an example for us to say, here's the wrong way, and here are the results of the wrong way. But we now base our lives on the true vine of Jesus. So Jesus is the vine, and we are the branches on that vine. And of course, we have a big responsibility. We got to stay attached to that vine, being Jesus. And we also have to produce good fruits. We have to be loving and having the fruits of the Spirit. All right, so now we're off to our fourth I Am. And this one was also something that was very confusing and hard for people to understand. Jesus said he is the bread of life. So we'll turn and read John chapter 6, verse 34 and verse 35. John 6, 34 and verse 35. And we'll see what Jesus said about being the bread of life. Verse 34, then they said to him, Lord, give us this bread always. So this passage is happening, I don't know if it's exactly the day after that he'd fed the 5,000. So he fed the 5,000, and then he ended up on the other side of, I think it was the Sea of Galilee. And whether it was the exact same people who had been fed or other people who'd heard about the feeding, they were thinking in this physical world of bread, because they just, the day before, 5,000 people or 5,000 men had been fed a physical meal of bread. 34 again, Lord said, they said, Lord, give us this bread. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. So the fourth I Am is that Jesus is the bread of life. This is repeated in this section here in chapter 6, I think Jesus says it three times, three different times in slightly different ways, that he is the bread of life. He's the living bread. And John repeats it once. So it's actually four times in this chapter. Like it was with the previous I am, when he said he is the door, people didn't understand. They had a hard time trying to figure out what was going on. But this is another case where the manna of the Old Testament represented Jesus. So physical Israel was depending on manna, and they needed that to live. And the Jews of the day looked back and said, "We, you know, look at us. We are the people who received the manna. This manna was something special," and it certainly was. It was certainly a blessing from God. But they were looking at this in physical terms. They were looking and saying, "Look what we got. Look at this physical food that we got." And they were looking back at the old. But the old was just something that was going to point forward to Jesus being the actual bread of life that we need. We can see this in verse 32 a little bit more. Verse 32, backing up a little bit, Jesus said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven." So God the Father is giving them the true bread from heaven, which is Jesus. You know, if we only wanted to be physical beings, we would like to be fed by Christ. We'd like to have been there, one of the 5,000, and have participated in that meal. But our existence, our life is not to be physical. Our existence is to be spiritual. And as spiritual beings, we need Jesus as our bread of life. And as it says, as he said in there, if you believe in him as the bread of life, we will never hunger. This is the kind of bread of life we need to be spiritual beings, so that we can live forever. So coming back, I mentioned Gnosticism a little bit. By the way, a lot of this, or some of the material I'm getting for this message came from the Harmony of the Gospels FI online Bible study. This was taught by Richard Thompson. I'd first listened to it, I think it was first put online around 2012, thereabouts. And I know Josh has seen all this material, because if you watch the video, you can see him and his wife, at least the back of their heads in this video. If you haven't listened to it, or even if you have, I definitely encourage you to go back. It's really interesting and helpful. So he talked about Gnosticism, and maybe Josh, after church, can redraw the picture he put on the board to explain Gnosticism. We'll test Josh's memory if you want. But Gnostics, their belief, one of their beliefs was that God couldn't touch matter. And so one of the things that came down to is they didn't believe Jesus was real. And so they thought Jesus was, people that followed on this or had some beliefs in that didn't think Jesus was real. And some of the church brethren were beginning to follow this. And so John was trying to fight against this. And so throughout his book, he wants to tell us that Jesus was a real person, but he was also the real Son of God. And he really wanted to drive that point home, because unfortunately there were people who were kind of starting to believe that maybe Jesus wasn't real. And this was only 60 years, or maybe even less than 60 years after his life. People were already questioning whether he was a real person or not. So John was trying to fight against this Gnostic view and teach and encourage his followers, the Church of God, that Christ was real. This point on the bread of life also ties into Passover. And the disciples in verse 53 got an early look of what the final Passover, what our Passover was like. In verse 53 in the same chapter, "Most assuredly I say to you, unless you eat my flesh of the Son of Man and drink the blood, you will have no life in you." So here is an early look. This is how Jesus is that bread of life, and how we're reminded on an annual basis of this. This morning or last night, I heard a new term. I knew what it meant. I knew the belief, but I never heard the term. It was called transinstantiation. Anyone familiar with that term? All right, we got at least one. So tying into this verse, The Catholics actually believe that as they partake of these symbols, that as they eat the wafer or drink the wine, that actually turns into the body or the blood of Jesus as they're taking this in. And the term, which I'd never heard before, is transubstantiation. Interesting. All right. Oh, did I lose my clicker power? Nope. All right, moving along. This is the fifth I Am. Now, so far, let me do a bit of a recap on what we've covered so far. And I put these in a particular order, at least in my mind, they was kind of building on top of each other. So we start with the world in darkness. People are stumbling around in darkness, but Jesus comes along and he is the light of the world. He shows us the true way. We can see with his light. And then we enter into his life through him being the door. So we have the light, we can see the door, we enter in. Then he becomes the true vine that we attach ourselves and grow off of, and we become a part of him in this metaphor as being branches on a vine. And then how we live our life, how we're sustained, is through Jesus being the bread of life. So we have life through him. So we're part of his vine. We're growing and living off of him as the bread of life. So now, how do we survive throughout our whole life? That's where this next I Am, I think, really helps us to understand. So the next I Am is that he said, I am the good shepherd. So we're going to read John chapter 10, 11 through 14, and see this point. So I could have made it easy for you because we're already in chapter 10 talking about him being the door, but I wanted to switch it up. So we'll go back and continue almost from where we left off. Verse 11 through 14 says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them, but the hireling flees because he is just a hireling and does not care about the sheep. Verse 14 says, Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I am known by them. So Jesus is our shepherd. He will care for us for our entire lives. Let's turn back and look at this. Psalm 23, we know this. I could probably just reference it, and you guys would all know what I mean, but it's such a wonderful passage, short chapter, that any good excuse to go back and read this, I think, is a good excuse. So let's look at Psalm 23. How is Jesus our shepherd? How does he take care of us? Psalms chapter 23, and we'll start in verse 1 and go through verse 6. The Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. You know, the wording here, I think we all understand it, but it's a little strange in the wording here. But we will have no wants. We'll have everything we need with Jesus as our shepherd. He will take care of us. Verse 2, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. How often do we need our souls restored, and that Jesus will do that as our shepherd? He leads me through the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Every day it seems like we're, maybe not every day, maybe hopefully not on a day like today, the Sabbath day, but so often it feels like we're walking through death in this world. But we can walk through that because we have Jesus as our shepherd. I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Jesus takes such good care of us as a shepherd takes care of his sheep, even to the point of giving up his life for us. One thing that was interesting also, and it just I wanted to hit on a couple of verses in John. We need to get back to the book of John anyway to cover our next I Am. So we can turn over there. About Jesus being in control. You know, the Pharisees and the Jews, the leading Jews, were trying to kill him. They were trying to get to him. And it's, if you look at it from a From a secular point of view, why didn't they just go grab him and do something with him? But he's in control. And the point that I want, the tie-in I want to have here is one, to kind of show you some more things about the book of John, but also just to give us some confidence that Jesus is our shepherd and he can take care of us. He is in control. So let's look at, let's see, where do I want to go? Catch up on my notes. So we're going to look at John chapter, well, first of all, we don't turn there, but I won't turn there, but just to refer, one of the reasons why the Jews or the Pharisees couldn't just go grab him is because it wasn't his time. Both in chapter 7:30 and 8 verse 20, it says this, it was not his time. They may have wanted to go grab him and kill him or take him away, but it wasn't his time. He was in control. It says this in a couple of passages I do want to look at, which is John 8 verse 59. Just find these to be informative and inspiring. Just shows how Jesus was in control. He allowed whatever happened, he allowed to happen only on his terms and not anyone else's terms. John 8:59 says, "And they took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so he passed." It's just such an interesting thing. So here he is. They must have seen him, and they were picking up stones to throw at him, but then somehow he just, did he literally vanish? I don't know. Did he literally walk by them? Were they blinded in some miraculous way? I don't know, but they were ready to throw stones at him, but it wasn't his time, and so he just passed through. John 10:39 is another passage. We won't turn there for the sake of time, but again, he escaped out of their hands. He is in control. As our shepherd, he can do everything and anything for us. He will take care of us. That brings us to our sixth I am. What is the point? Why are we here? Why were we created? It's because Jesus is the resurrection and the life. You know, we're going through this. We're fighting our battles. We're living our life in a particular way because of the resurrection. If there was no resurrection, there would be no point for our lives. There would be no point for us to be struggling in the way that we are to overcome. So let's look at this in John chapter 11 and verse 25. John 11, 25. And Jesus said to her, so he's speaking to the woman accused of adultery. That's the context. And he said to her, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. He's speaking to Martha after Lazarus had passed away and he was in the grave. And he said to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live." So Jesus is our resurrection. Let's look at a couple passages that talk about this in more detail. First, we'll turn to the resurrection chapter, which is 1 Corinthians 15, and read one verse here. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 21. This helps to define or describe Jesus as the resurrection. So it says, "For since by man came death," so man with the little m, which could be referring to Adam or could be referring to any of us who have sinned, who are sinners. Death is coming from us, from Adam. "But by man with a capital M also came the resurrection of the dead." So Jesus, that capital M man in this passage, is bringing resurrection. Let's look at 1 Peter 1 verse 3. Talks more about this. 1 Peter 1 verse 3. 1 Peter 1 verse 3 says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ of the dead." In John 6 verse 40, we know we need to get back to the book of John to continue with our seventh I am. So John 6 verse 40 says, "And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up. So if you believe in Jesus, you will believe that he is the resurrection and that we can have everlasting life in him. Finally, the seventh I am. John 14, verse 6, look there, John 14, verse 6. Here it says, Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to me except through the Father. So Jesus is the way, the only way. I was, I'd heard a radio talk show person talking, and he said, well, my view on life is that life is like spokes on a wheel. God is at the center, and all these spokes are coming out in different directions, and there are many paths to get to God or to our ultimate destiny. And of course, that's clearly not right. Jesus is the only way. He is the only way. Believing in him and following him, he's the only way. Let's look at a couple passages. Maybe we'll just look at one here. Hebrews 10, verse 20. Hebrews 10, verse 20. Hebrews 10, verse 20 says, and by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is, his body. So Jesus, through his life, through his body, opened a new way for us to live. And this is the only way that we can live successfully. So we made it. Those are the seven I am's. And again, I put them in order in a way that try to build on each other. I won't turn there, but we started one of the, maybe the second verse we read was where Jesus, or John said, I wrote this so that you can believe Jesus, and then in believing you can have everlasting life. Through these seven I am's, I think that we can learn more about what Jesus was like, both as a person when he was here on earth in a human form, and also as just the mighty being that he is, and being the Son of God and our Savior. You know, we live in a dark world, but Jesus brought light and is the door through which we need to go through. He is like a living vine, and we are part of that and need to be bearing good fruit. He is our bread of life. We need to depend on him completely, just as we depend on food or bread for our physical lives. Throughout our lives, he is our shepherd. He cares for us, he protects us, and he corrects us at times to keep us safe. And then we can be part of that resurrection to make this human existence and our lives and our struggles worthwhile. Jesus is the way for us. He is the truth for us to follow. He is life, the only life that matters, and the only life that will last.